Okay, we're going to start and let each of you introduce yourselves on the tape so that when they transcribe the tape, the first thing that they will hear is you saying your name, where you were born, and when you were born. And then after that, we'll get into decibel type questions. So just let you start.
I'm Imogene Glover. I was Imogene Davison. I was born north of Texhoma, close to Elkhart, Kansas, in what is considered the center of the Dust Bowl. This is according to the group that came out from Washington, D.C. and did the survey of the Dust Bowl area during that time.
What year were you born?
I was born the 4th of November, 1924.
Okay.
I'm Alma Ogden. I was born in Hardwood, Oklahoma, March 5th, 1929. And I now live in Farmington, New Mexico.
Is that Hardwood?
Hardwood. Hardwood no longer exists as a town. It's near Atoka.
All right, okay.
But that's what my birth certificate says, is Hardwood.
Maybe she should tell her connection to the panhandle out here.
My mother is Almerda Shiflett. She was born at Range and has lived here in this area many years and grew up here during the Dust Bowl days.
Okay.
Her maiden name was Ross.
I'm Birdine Shiflett Rollins. My folks actually lived at Goodwill when I was born, but I was born at Fort Collins, Colorado, because my dad was going to college out there that summer. Alma Ogden's my sister, and my folks, my grandparents, Ina and John Ross, homesteaded in the Hardesty area in 1901.
So your family's been here for a long time.
Mm-hmm. When were you born?
Oh, I was born June 30th, 1925. And I married Orville Rollins, who was born at Tyrone, Oklahoma, in 1924.
What now?
My husband.
Oh, he was born in 1924.
Orville Rollins. Okay. He was born in 1924 at Tyrone.
You said you got married in 1924.
No, that wouldn't quite
be. It was an arranged marriage.
That's right.
Right.
Your turn.
Okay, Mrs. Jackson.
I'm Imogene Mitchell Jackson. I was born 7 miles south of Tyrone in January the 11th, 1918. And I've lived in Hooker, that area in Hooker, all my life.
All right, then. So, well, we're just going to start talking real easy. This shouldn't be hard at all. About where, what kind of places you would you consider where you live a rural area or a more of a city area?
It was definitely rural.
Yeah.
All of us. I was born so far out in the country that they went to Elkhart, Kansas to get Dr. Tucker to deliver me.
Well, they tell me that I was delivered without a doctor. He got there later because it was stormy. I mean, it was, you know. And every year on my birthday, nearly, it always snows or it is stormy.
And what is your birthday?
January 11th.
Yeah. That's a good time for storms.
Very seldom is it a clean day. Kids had my birthday party at my 80th birthday, and it was terrible. It snowed, and they had to get out and use the snow blower. And
my goodness.
I guess I was born in the big city of Fort Collins, Colorado. I have no idea what it looked like then or what it looks like now. But my folks lived at Goodwill, and Goodwill was a great big town, of course.
Well, it was bigger then than it is now.
Yes, it was. My dad was teaching school at the PAI, and my mother
was a student.
Right. Well, not when I was born, but
when they met.
Right.
Well, so if you all kind of have a rural background, describe for us the kind of house where you lived. Was it a big house? Was it little? How many rooms did it have? Anything you remember about it?
The house at Goodwill where my folks lived was a little three-room house.
How many people were living in the three-room house?
Well, when they first got married, I'm the second child,
okay.
So there were four of us then.
But then the family moved away from there and lived in different places in Oklahoma, and then we moved back there when I was a senior in high school, and it was still three rooms, and there were still eight children at home.
Oh my gosh!
And the house is still there. It's Daddy built all around it, but the three rooms are still intact right there in the middle of it. My grandsons live there now.
In Goodwill?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
I lived in a two-room house, and later, during the Dirty 30s, a cyclone or tornado picked it up and turned it around and set it back down on the same foundation. It was called the Ghost Place, and it was near what's Four Corners, Oklahoma now, out on 64 Highway.
Why is it called the Ghost Place?
Well, ghosts has lived there before my folks did. And I think that they probably moved back there later, the ghosts did. But that was the reason it was called the Ghost Place.
I thought maybe it was the ghost that caused it to be set down on the same foundation.
But during the Dirty 30s, I grew up in a three-room house. Mm-hmm. And actually, it wasn't. It was. It was one big room with a shed built on the north for the kitchen and a tiny bedroom, and then there was another little addition that was what Mother called the utility room, but it was a sort of a back porch room where they brought in the milk and took care of that, and there was a washstand there, and I need Kleenex.
Mm-hmm. I can get something.
Anyway, it was really a lean-to on this one big room. And that's the picture that I have in my mind of a lot of the houses at that time.
Yeah. Does this sound similar to the house where you lived?
No, I was fortunate. I lived in a five-room house.
Yeah.
Wow.
With how many people?
It was just the four. Two brothers and a sister, and my daddy, my mother, died when I was 6 months old. So then dad remarried when I was almost nine. And so all of us lived there. And they, the back porch, I guess is what it was, they closed in because this brother became an invalid and from arthritis. Hmm. And so he was an invalid. He died on my 30th birthday.
Huh. And this was your brother?
My brother.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, my dad never did. They never did have any more children. I mean, it was just the four of us.
Mm-hmm. So, I was going to ask about the logistics of having eight kids, a mom and a dad, in a three-room house.
Yeah, we had a bedroom, a living room, and a kitchen.
Did you all sleep?
No.
How did you...
Well, one place we lived, we had three rooms, and the house didn't have any ceiling in it. It just had rafters, and Daddy put two people slept up there on the rafters up in the attic part. And every night, Mama put a mattress on the kitchen table, and two or three slept
and
there.
And the little kids slept on the table.
Yeah, and then we had one bed in the living room, which was the middle room.
Three people could sleep in.
And Mom and Daddy had then the other room, and there were two beds in there. And then later, Daddy made a bunk bed out of one big bed. So there was a big bed with a bunk bed on top of it and another bed over here, and then a bed in the living room, and a bed on the kitchen table. And
where was the best place? Where did you always want to be?
Wherever they told us to sleep.
Wherever there was a place to sleep.
Until I got great big, three of us slept in one bed together all the time. And Alma was the fourth one in the family, and she got a cot by herself, and we were all very envious. And she.
I went to visit Thrashers that lived across the, about a mile and a half from us, and they had 11 children, sort of like this. And we'd go over and spend the night on Saturday night quite often so we could go to church on Sunday morning with them. And there would be five of us kids sleeping in the same bed, on one end and two on the bottom.
Right.
And our feet would go up between the other kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, this story beats that. My husband's folks had a twin bed when they got married, and then they had to, after they had three children, they all slept in that twin bed. The mom and daddy at one end and the three kids at the other. And I said, I don't know how they, any of them ever
slept.
But see, there were 10 children in our family all together. Mm-hmm. And I remember one time when my cousin was getting ready to go to service, this was in the 40s, they came in, we were at Goodwill, they came in to spend the night with us, and there were, well, I believe there were 10 of them. Anyway, they all came in, and there was all of our family, and we were literally all over the floor.
We slept on the floor.
Yeah. Every spot on the floor was covered with people.
Can't imagine.
I can't either now. I'm sure glad it's not me. But then the next morning we got up and brought J.D. to Gaiman, and he got on the train to go to service.
That's a lot of people in one place.
Needless to say, whenever it was time to go to town to buy essential things, the whole family didn't go to town.
Yeah.
No. Daddy.
Daddy went to town.
And sometimes one kid got to go.
Yeah.
And how did they decide who was going to go?
Well, we took turns.
Yeah.
One time, I went to town, and I was supposed to buy a set of jacks for the kids, for us to play with. This was a big jack rage, and it was going to cost a nickel, and we had saved up enough money that we had in there. And I went to town, we got there, and they didn't have any jacks.
Did you buy something else instead?
No.
Just saved your 5 cents.
For jacks.
Well, what else did you like to play with? Jacks and what else?
Oh, we played jacks until
marbles?
The girls. Yeah, the boys more played jacks. Marbles than we did. Played jacks. Jumped rope. We always jumped rope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We played cowboys and Indians, and my brother made what we call rubber guns. It was a wooden gun with a closed pin on the back end that held that rubber band that was cut out of an old inner tube. Inner tube, and I got hit in the eye one time, and man, I didn't forget that. We were playing with Glenn Freeman that lived a mile south of us. The boys, I think, were against me. I was the Indian.
Oh,
they got you.
Hopscotch?
Yeah, we did too.
Were you champion hopscotcher?
Yeah, we played hopscotch a lot.
We also made those guns.
Yes, we did.
All of us in our family had a gun. And those inner tubes out of those cars were just about this big round. You'd cut it off about this thick, and it was exactly, you made your gun the exact length so that thing was
so full tight tube would fit. I remember something else that I used to really enjoy playing that we played a lot was Annie Over. We played that a lot.
How did you play Annie Over? Because we've heard some differences in the rules of Annie Over.
You threw the ball.
Half of the people got on one side and half on the other, and there were always enough of us in our family to play without anybody else.
we'd try
to
throw
it over the house or the school house.
And you'd try to be sneaky about where you threw the ball, you know. And sometimes you'd try to throw it so that it didn't quite go over, it would come back. And I don't remember about the
If it got all the way over and they didn't catch it, you got a point.
Yeah.
if it didn't, if they caught it, you didn't get a point. So that's why you tried to throw it where the,
at angles or whatever, so that you could
miss them.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there'd be people scattered up and down the side of the house, so there'd be somebody where the ball, wherever the ball came over, you know.
If you could see it.
But if you threw it real cross like that, way over on the corner, and it really went over, well, you usually got a point.
Yeah.
You didn't, though, after you caught the ball, run around and try to pelt the other side with the ball?
No, no, we didn't.
That's how somebody taught Steve to play.
We also played kick the can a whole lot.
We played kick the can
a lot. Yeah. I rode a horse most of the time because I had to go get the mail on my horse. It was a mile to the mailbox.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed meeting the mailman because he always had the news of what was going on in the community.
The only time I rode the horse was with my brother when he'd take me to school when the weather was bad. Yeah. Or one of the school teachers he married, but I meant to, you know, he'd take me because she had to walk across the field too, you know. So he'd take me so he can visit with her a little bit before school.
Sure.
Come and get me. Or they'd take us in the wagon.
We didn't get to ride horses. Daddy had two plow horses, and they were work animals. They weren't riding animals. But once in a great while, he'd let us ride a little bit. One time, Bertine was riding a horse, and the horse, she liked to swallow air or puff her belly out, you know, when you put the, so that when you fasten up the cinch, it didn't get tight enough. And Bertine was riding, and the saddle began to slip.
Oh, no.
And just slipped all the way over to the side and dumped her off.
But another time, Ina was riding Nig and I was riding Eagle, and we were going down into the pasture to get pecans. And, you know, we carried the bags of pecans up.
Picked up pecans.
And Ina got started ahead of me, and I yelled, "Wait, Ina, wait." But she didn't. And when I got on Eagle, she went, and I went flying out into the field.
Where did they have pecans in this country?
Well, this is after we moved from here.
This is before we moved back to Goodwill.
But then I said, "I'll never get on a horse again." And I got right up, got right on that horse and rode home.
Well, you mentioned going to get the mail. What other kind of chores were your responsibility to do?
She's talking about riding. I had to walk to get our mail.
We did too. I had to gather the eggs, and I had to sometimes slop the hogs. Not often.
Yeah.
But I didn't like that job because
carry in water, go get the cattle. I mean, so the people could milk.
We milked the cows every morning before we went to school. We had to get up and milk.
Separate, wash the separator.
Yeah, and get enough wood in for Mama for the cooking for the day, especially in the wintertime, for the cooking and the heating.
Be sure beds were made. I had company the other day.
Yeah, we had to take our bed off the table.
They said, "You never catch your bed unmade." And I said, "No, unless I'm in it, you don't catch it unmade because I make it when I get up."
Yeah,
you
do too.
A lasting impression, huh?
As I said, I had this brother that was an invalid, and my stepmother would not let us go to bed unless the house was picked up and the dishes were done and everything. There wasn't anything out of place except the beds we slept in.
Yeah.
I had to help gather the cow chips we didn't have wood, and so we burned cow chips in the wintertime.
Yeah.
And we had wood and coal, but you had to bring that in too. Mm-hmm. That was one of your chores. Yeah.
My dad had to go to Colorado to get coal, and they'd try to make a trip up there about once a year, he and the neighbors, to get enough coal for all of us.
Well, Mama lived down at Range in the Hardesty community, and she talks about they picked up cow chips all the time. But she talks about herding the cattle. They had no fences, and she said her job was, she and her younger brother was to herd the cattle every day when it was time for them to graze. And Grandpa told them they could come home when it was noon. And the way they told if it was noon was if their shadow was straight up. You know, it wasn't sleep.
Yeah.
They had no timepieces. But she said, we'd watch for the shadow. And
know when it was time.
But they took the cattle out every day in grazing.
I'm sure the tanks were full so the cattle could come in and get drinks, you know. I think we all had herd cattle if we had any.
Something that always kind of amazed me on my grandmother and grandfather's place was the cistern that they had.
Yeah.
They had a cistern for water. And you have to fill it up, you know, and then you get your water out of the cistern. You don't have a well. Didn't have a well.
We
had a source of water.
There weren't any cisterns in this area.
Yes. Range for Mom Ridge. They always had a cistern.
We had one, but I went to. We had pumped the water, you know, to drink. And
we hauled water from the creek until we had a well.
So did they. They hauled water early and put it in barrels.
Some days there wasn't enough wind, so you had to pump it.
But then
I remember seeing them down in eastern Oklahoma.
But then they hauled water from the
cistern I ever saw.
They hauled water from the Paladuro to the cistern, and to this day there's not any good water on that place.
Goodness.
Well, no, that's right. It's salty, the water.
Well,
Orville and I bought the land for Grandma Homestead.
The Paladuro is your land?
The corner of it.
The creek that ran through it, yeah.
Well, now, Paladur Canyon at Amarillo is different than this Paladur.
This is a little place out behind.
Over by Range is where
the Paladur is the creek that runs down there across the corner of that canyon.
And there's good water on that section.
So. Right.
So.
So their cattle had to be driven to the creek to drink, because they never had any well there. Right, because the land was pretty plentiful then.
But I was always kind of amazed by that cistern, because I'd never seen one before and haven't seen
one since. It's still there, and right there by the house. The sod house is still there.
The sod house is still standing.
Can you see it?
Yeah, it's covered with cement on the outside, but it's there.
Yeah.
It's on the land that we bought.
And there's another thing that I remember with that kind of a chuckle. We have pictures of that sod house with tumbleweeds growing on top of it.
In fact,
speaking of tumbleweeds, and you ask about games we played. When I was a kid, one Sunday we went to the neighbors, and there was a draw down there about, half a mile west of where some of these their relatives lived. Uh-huh. And there were two boys, Betty Jean Mulkey and Wayman H. Mulkey, and my brother, J.R. Davison, and I ran down there, and there was kind of a little, I don't know, maybe some boards across to make a little bridge across this gully. But we were playing right below that, and there was just tumbleweeds had blown in there with the dust storms till it was as high as this ceiling, the tumbleweeds. We decided to pull those out and build us a house. And we even put a roof on it. When my mother found out that's what we'd been doing, she just had a fit. What if they'd have caught fire?
Yeah.
And I said, we didn't have any matches. But we built us a house out of tumbleweeds, and we played all afternoon with tumbleweeds. So that's how kids can make do if they don't have toys. You can have a good
one. Yeah.
Well, right where I live right now in Hooker, one day, two or three days, the tumbleweeds blew up. I mean, they blew all over Hooker, but nobody got them like we did. They piled our backyard fence full. Then they piled it up to the eaves of the house, and then they blew over the house and piled the front yard full, and we couldn't even get in the side door. And some of my grandkids came, and they said, Grandma, this is such fun. We'll build some tunnels. And a whole bunch of men came to get them out, and I said, you're going to ruin the trees with the fire. And they said, don't worry about the trees. And sure enough, the side of one of my big trees, it ruined it. But they worked all day one day burning tumbleweeds.
Where was this?
So that we could get into the house.
This was fairly recently then, huh?
Yeah,
well,
about last fall. I mean,
no, this has been several years ago.
Well, we had a bad storm, and I remember blowing down the street just last...
Our house was just located so that it blew right across the field, mm-hmm. right into our backyard. We've got a tall wooden fence, and it just built up back there. Mm-hmm. And during the time they were blowing, I got out on the side, and I kept kicking them on by, you know. And it filled up the backyard, filled up the front yard. Mm-hmm. It was clear up to the top of the house, and we couldn't get out that side door at all. Until we got, and when you get ready to get those things out, they're stacked in there just like a haystack. I mean, they are
hard.
I've never seen it.
That's
crazy. They really are tough.
Well, can I tell you a story?
You got to use a fork or something like that.
But I said, we don't have to worry about getting it out. We'll just make it a path. And somebody said, yes, and your house will burn down. Because those things are full of oil.
Yeah.
And they really do burn, too.
Yeah, they don't burn fast. I was thinking about the rabbit drives.
Tell us about the rabbit drives.
I've seen them, too.
We got caught in one up by Tyrone. And as I said, I had this brother that was the invalid, and we'd left him home by himself, you know, and the dirt come up, and I said that I know that my daddy always prayed, but that's the first time I'd heard him pray out loud that we could get home. Well, when we got home, my other brother that lived about a mile from him had come and closed up the house, but it was just so dirty we just had to pull off the road, you know, of course, that wasn't the only rabbit drive I was ever to. There was a number of them in our area, and they'd get out, you know, and walk and have a fence, and they'd drive these rabbits up to that fence, you know. And, of course, the rabbits were plentiful then, and they ate them, and, you know, but you don't see very many now.
We only ate cottontails. Jackrabbits were tough.
Well,
they are tough.
You started to tell us.
Well, I'd like to tell you a story. Our mother is just full of stories. She just tells many, many tales, and I'm really sorry she's not able to be here today because she really has lots of tales to tell. But our grandfather was a preacher, but they lived out in the country, you know. But people would come to him sometimes for different things, different reasons. And she tells a story about a couple that came in a horse, in a buggy, because there were no cars at that time, and they came and drove up in the buggy, and they wanted to get married. And he went out to talk to them, stood out to talk to them for quite a little while, and they sat in the buggy and talked to him and told him who they were and what their plans were and what they wanted to do and so on. So he decided it'd be all right to marry them. So he married them, and they drove off and never got down out of that buggy.
And that was,
I just think that's so
that
funny.
Was right by the sod house. It's
yeah,
still down there.
Yeah. They just drove up in the yard, and they sat there and talked, and then he married them, and off they went.
Said he asked them if their folks knew, and they said, oh, yes, our folks know. And of course, he had no idea whether they did or not, but he decided it was okay to marry them.
Huh.
But that...
No, I was going to ask you right when you came back. Where is the sod house?
You know where Hardesty is?
Yeah.
Okay. You go 5 miles east on Highway 3, and you turn south, and you go almost 4 miles south, or about four. It might be four and a half, or it might be, I believe it's four and a half. It's on the left-hand side of that road.
It's
and now it's a paved road. Used to be, it was a muddy, muddy, muddy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that before you get down to the creek where the C.D. Alexander's place was?
I think so. I'm not sure.
It was 6 miles south of Hardesty.
Right.
Yeah.
See, the range school was right on past their house, I think a mile and a half, right up on the hill.
I have pictures of it.
Yeah. And the range school is still down there, too.
Yes.
What's the road that you go 4.5 miles south on? Does it have a name or a number or anything?
Probably has a number, but
yes, I'm sure it does. But it's exactly 5 miles east of Hardesty.
On Highway 3.
Yeah. And on the left-hand side of that road, there's a great big house there on kind of back from the corner that has a whole bunch of trees and things around it. This house was the Graves house, and it was across the road. It was right there where you turn used to be. And this younger couple bought this house and moved it over there where it is now. And so that corner where you turn, there's not anything, but there's a row of trees still there.
I was always at that Graves corner. We'd go north to the McBride place. See, the McBrides were my relatives. And that's where we had the most fun at Christmas time.
What did you do at Christmas time there?
Well, there were a bunch of kids, and we had Santa Claus come.
Yeah.
Mr. McBride was our Santa Claus, and man, he heavy set man, and he wore a red stocking on his head, and he carried a gunny sack on his back, and it was full of old brown paper sacks with apples and oranges and nuts and candy for all the kids. That was the greatest Christmas we had. We didn't get toys, but we all had a treat.
Miss Jackson, do you remember any special Christmases?
Well, there was one that I was thinking about that the other day. That was before Dad had remarried, and of course, we didn't have a lot of money, you know. And I had wanted a little doll buggy, and I didn't suppose I'd get it. And woke up at Christmas morning, and they had this doll buggy with a big doll in it, you know. And I was always so proud of that. They'd all surprise me.
There were so many of us at Christmas time that Mom and Dad didn't even try to give all of us presents. And we were really poor. And so we'd draw names. And we'd make something for each other. Mm-hmm. And one of the special Christmases that I remember is Daddy got my name, and he made me a pair of stilts.
Oh,
yeah.
And we used to love to play on stilts. We all had, eventually, you know, more or less, we all had stilts. And we'd run around on those things. We really liked them. But well, that was...
We always had a big... Because Dad's... Dad come out here in 1916, brought his family and all of them. They was my sister and or my two brothers, and I was the only one born down here. And the Wiggins was his sister, and he had three Mitchell brothers that lived out there too, you see. So, and all their families. And being I had this brother that was the invalid, well, they always came to our house mm-hmm. for Christmas because mm-hmm. we couldn't leave him easily, you know, for meals because mm-hmm. he could not walk. He was just like a piece of lumber. He lifted his feet when he turned him up on his head, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And he could not move his hands, so we'd prop these pillows up and he'd read the papers by turning his head, you know, moving those across the paper, and then we'd turn them over, and he'd read the other side, do the same way. But he always kept up. And somebody said to me the other day, said, "You write so many letters," and I said, "Well, he dictated them to me, and so I grew up as writing letters." You know.
Now, is his brother older than you or younger than you?
He was the oldest, so
okay.
Yeah, I was 7 years younger than the sister.
I remember during the time when we were all poor that we would go to Hardesty, back to that Graves place, and go down to McBride's, and where the Optima Lake is now mm-hmm. was a wild sand plum bed. And Dean Randalls would come out to McBride's, and he and I would ride his horses out there and pick plums off of the horse's back because there were so many rattlesnakes down in the bushes. So we just stay on the horse and pick the plums and put them in the sack.
Yep.
Now when I go plum picking, I lay a sheet under it and shake it for a tarp.
Yeah.
And I get them in a hurry.
I'd like to tell something I remember about Christmas.
We made sand plum jelly.
And like Alma said, there were always a bunch of us. But one year, Mama got Ina, she's the oldest, Tommy doll. His little old tiny doll that looked like he was whistling. He's called Whistling Tommy, and he had a china head. And she got Mabel and me. We were the next two. She got us a doll together, which was a fairly tall composition doll. And I don't know if you know about the composition stuff, but it, after it gets old, it cracks and peels. But anyway, and she got Alma a blow-up doll, which was kind of like these blow-up toys you have now. And Daddy had found some kind of a little old tree that had thorns all over it that had some green leaves on it. And I don't know what kind of a tree it was or where he found it, but he brought it in for a Christmas tree. Well, somebody put Alma's doll in the Christmas tree, and guess what happened to it?
Got punctured.
Well, you mentioned before when you were telling that your dad got your name and made you stilts. What did you make for your siblings or whoever she
I don't remember that.
I don't either.
Do you remember what we did? I don't know. Mama always helped us, helped each of us. You know, when we were smaller, she'd help us figure out something to make and help us make it so that we had something to exchange with each other. But I don't remember what kinds of things we made.
We had little 3-inch china dolls that were straight up and down. Their legs didn't move, but their arms would move.
Yeah.
And their hair was sort of curly like Betty Grable used to wear hers. But I remember they would just fit in a matchbox. And you could take a piece of material about the size of 2 postage stamps and make a dress for that doll. Huh. And, of course, you just sewed it on the sides where you'd cut out a hole for the neck. Anyway, that was the kind of dolls that I played with when I was little. Yeah. We didn't have
big dolls.
We
didn't
have dolls either. I know when you're talking about going to town for groceries or something, my daddy took a load of wheat to Hooker, and coming back, of course he bought groceries while he was there, and coming back the lightning struck him and he woke up hanging over the end of the wagon, you know, and the horses of course are going on home, and he said he didn't know how he came out of that, you know, but it never did, but it knocked him out, you know, and then back in the dirty 30s we was talking about that. One particular storm, while I was in school, the night before, while we'd had it, and it blew dust across until it piled it up in a fence as high as this table. And then one time we were at the school, I went to the old Eureka School, which it burned in 1935. It got so bad that we just did like that, you know, going over roads to get home. They had blown out, these drifts had blown out in the road.
Like a washboard?
Well, they were deeper than that. I mean, they were a foot or some of them were bigger than that. They were just, you know, really deep.
Drifting.
What do you guys remember about the famous Black Sunday? In 35,
my daddy was in town at the cafe. They called it Odom's Hamburger Joint, and it just had light bulbs hanging on a cord above the counter where he was sitting eating the hamburger. And he said that it was so black that he couldn't see that light bulb 1 foot above his head, and that's pretty black.
But his hamburger didn't taste very good after I ate it.
He didn't mention that. But at that time, you could buy a hamburger and a Coke for a dime.
Yeah.
Maybe the hamburger was a dime and the Coke was a nickel. But anyway, we could go to town on Saturdays and have a hamburger and a drink. I always had pop, a colored pop, red.
When did they start having
And go to movies for a dime, so that for a quarter we could really have a big feast.
Quarters were quarter wasn't much more. I mean, it was as much then as $15 is today.
Well, she asked when they started making pop.
Can you remember when you didn't have pop?
I can, because my aunt made us.
Didn't have it anyway.
My aunt made us red drinks out of some kind of a
bottle of pop, though.
I was going to tell you. I think I was about 8 years old, first bottle of pop I ever had. Because before that, I'd go over to my Aunt Emel's, and she would buy this extract, some kind of flavoring from the Watkins man or whoever it was that came around. And she'd add water out of the well just as soon as she'd bring it up. It was cold. And that was the first pop I ever had that was homemade. But then when we would go to town when I was about 8 years old, we hadn't moved to town yet. That's when I got my first bottle of strawberry. Delaware Punch was my favorite.
Ours was lemonade. They buy lemons, you know, and make lemonade.
Yes, we had lemonade on Sundays when I was little.
I don't remember.
Big tree first pops.
I don't remember ever having any when I was a kid.
We didn't ever have pop when we were kids. Ever.
Not literally. It was about 1932 when I first.
Now, we had lemonade once in a while.
Once in a while, we had lemonade.
What was your favorite food?
You should have said, what we eat mostly.
That's a different question. What did you eat mostly?
Beans.
Beans.
Beans. Butter beans.
I'll tell you what. We ate so much cornmeal mush and so many brown beans that after I got married, I wouldn't cook them.
Oh, and I just love them still.
Fried chicken, was that a treat?
No, it wasn't really a treat because we raised them and that was what we used for meat.
Yeah.
Because Dad raised cattle and he would not let us butcher them.
We did. But we always had meat and eggs, always.
We had meat and eggs, but when Mama butchered a chicken, there were 11 of us. She cooked one chicken.
Yeah, good.
One chicken.
One chicken.
No, Dad would, we raised the chickens, and that's partially what we raised them for.
Well, that's all we used ours for, but if we ate too many of them, there wasn't enough.
Then we didn't have any left.
There was just six.
But Mama figured out how to cut it so everybody could get a piece, and our oldest sister always wanted the breast. The rest of us, none of us wanted the breast, but we always were jealous that she got more meat than we did.
They could have cut it in two.
But this is something that most people never heard of. Bertine liked the scratchers.
Yeah.
You sew them in the neck. Yeah, we always cleaned the...
We skinned them.
Scald them and pulled the skin off and took their scratchers off. And I still to this day like the scratchers.
I like the neck.
And the neck.
And you eat the feet.
Yeah.
You eat them.
I never heard that.
And my grandmother that lived down here at Rain, she always cooked the head and ate the brain out of it. Always.
I didn't know chickens had brains.
It isn't very big, but
my dad always said you cook eggs and brain.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You cook them together. You cook them you could use two skillets. You cook them just right, and then you throw the brains out and eat the eggs.
We always had pork for our second because we'd raise hogs. Never will forget one time Dad told me to go out and water the hogs. And they had a hole, you know, dug for them. And I went out there and they were laying in the this place where the water was. And I poured the water on them and it killed them. So they had to butcher them in the summertime, you see.
Oh, they were too hot.
The wintertime, of course, they'd butcher them and put them in what we called smokehouse. Cure them, you know. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But
you had lots of good fresh pork that summer, didn't you?
Yeah, we canned it too, mm-hmm. And we canned chicken and things like that.
One time, Mama sent me out to get the hogs out of the yard. I took a stick and I whacked one of them over the back, and he fell. I think he did recover, but I never have forgotten that. That great old big hog. Here he goes. Plump.
How big was that stick?
Not very big either, because I was a little kid. I must not have been over six. But hit it just right to
knock it down.
Yeah.
This was not when we lived out here in the Panhandle, but we lived in one place where we had guineas. Do you know what guineas are?
We had guineas.
And we used to have to gather the guinea eggs with a long-handled metal spoon, because if we didn't,
that
the
was
guineas...
scalded.
If there was any human scent on it, the guineas would never come back to their nest.
They wouldn't lay there again.
But Mama said something funny the other day, just a couple of days ago, that I didn't know. She said, we were talking about angel food cake, and she said, well, guinea eggs won't make angel food cake. You cannot whip guinea eggs. Whip the egg whites. Mm-hmm. She said, they just won't whip. She said, I tried to make an angel food cake out of guinea eggs one time, and it just doesn't work.
We went down, Mabel and I went down to gather the guinea eggs one time, and they were way, way out. They hid their nest everywhere. And we went, we were barefooted as usual. We always went barefooted because we didn't have shoes to wear on the farm. And Mabel got... I got stung by a stinging lizard. And if you've ever gotten stung by one...
Scorpion.
Yeah, a scorpion. And so I was quite a ways from where she was, and I started to the house, and I'd look back and I'd yell, I got stung, go ahead and hunt the guinea eggs. She thought I was saying, run, Mabel, run, there's something after us.
Oh, no.
She never did hear me. And I didn't slow down a drop.
My folks raised turkeys.
Yeah.
I did too. We had, before we had Thanksgiving time, we always had a turkey for Christmas and so on, you know.
Grandma raised turkeys down there at range at that sod house.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen the coyotes stand right out like that and howl and look right at her, and she'd be yelling and screaming at them, and they wouldn't move a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if she left them where they could, they... ate the turkeys.
Sure. Daddy raised turkeys, and he raised enough in 1927, I think it was, that he bought a Model T car.
Wow.
$300-some-odd with his turkey money. That was before the...
For the crash.
Crash in 1929.
Uh-huh. See, I was born in 1929.
I mean, that's what she raised. I mean, she raised indeed, but we sold them too, you know.
Grandma sold hers too.
Uh-huh.
And I can remember them getting up on the chicken house and roosting.
Yes. And up in the tree. Uh-huh. We had a big old cottonwood tree.
And Mama.
I played in that tree many
Mama May, my stepmother, was so scared of the dark. You didn't dare leave her, you know, and she'd worry about those turkeys, but she'd send us out to see about them instead of her going, you know.
Talking about the chickens and the turkeys roosting, and of course, guineas always roosted in trees, but Mama, one of the first things that I remember, it's in my memory about Mama talking about the Dust Bowl days, was she'd say, it'd get so dark that the chickens would go to roost.
Mm-hmm. They did.
They'd get in the chicken house and go to roost because they thought it was nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be that dark.
That was true.
Grandma.
What was the scorpion egg?
Stinging lizards.
Stinging lizards.
Yeah, that's what we are. They sting too.
And they do.
Mama, we always bought 100 pounds of sugar that was to last all year. And Mama stuck her hand in the sugar sack one time. One of those things was in there, and it stung her right between her fingers and her whole hand and arm.
Oh, my gosh.
I went to bed one night, and there was one right up there over me. And I was scared.
On this ceiling?
Spitless. I didn't know. You know, I was afraid to move, even.
How would you treat a sting from a scorpion?
Well, Daddy and Mama always use bluing.
Yeah.
Bluing is what you put in the clothes to.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing that Daddy always used was kerosene. You always soaked your hand in kerosene, or you soaked your foot in kerosene, or you soaked your...
If you stepped on a rusty nail, you soaked your foot in kerosene.
Salts,
we used kerosene. We didn't have Epsom salts, probably, but
We always had kerosene because that's what we burned in our mm-hmm. cook stove.
Yeah. Well,
that's
our
what
lamps.
We burned in our lamps.
Mm-hmm. Well, we did too.
We didn't have a cook stove.
But we had a coal oil cook stove. We had a coal oil one.
What were some other home remedies if you got hurt or if you had a stomach ache? What would you do?
Well, number one, if there was anything wrong with you, you got a laxative.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't have
castor oil.
You either got Epsom salts or
castor oil.
Or Cascara Sagrada.
Or what?
Cascara Sagrada. I don't know. It's just
that.
A laxative.
And if it was, yeah.
Sweeney tea.
Mama used Epsom salts lots more than she did castor oil.
Yeah.
What was the name?
Castora Sagrada.
Huh.
Now, I'm not sure that's even right, but.
I don't know.
That could be kind of castor oil.
I don't think so.
That sounds like castor oil.
I don't think so.
Well, Mother always gave the little ones castoria.
Yeah.
And that's probably from that same.
But castoria was for the stomach ache.
Yeah.
What about you? What were you guys doing?
I don't really. I mean, if we had to take castor oil, I remember if there was anything. But so far, I've been fortunate that my health is not. I've not had to take that kind of stuff very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, my brother was sick, and they put grease on his chest,
right?
Mm-hmm. And they'd give us turpentine and sugar to get the phlegm out of our throat.
Yeah,
right.
We used to. Daddy'd make hot toddies when he was sick.
Mm-hmm. The thing that I remember the most is I used to have earaches. Just really, really bad. Just terrible earaches. And Mama always used, she heated glycerin in a spoon, you know, until it was right
over the lamp.
And poured my ear full of glycerin and then stuffed it with cotton. And then wrapped me up in a quilt.
Did that help?
Yeah.
And set you by the hot fire.
And sat by the hot heater, you know, just to try to sweat it out, I guess. Mm-hmm. But that's the...
Well, it didn't help.
Well, sure it did.
I had what they called growing pains. And my legs would just ache. Oh, they would ache. And my mother would heat towels with what she did was she'd put an old iron on top of the stove and get it really hot.
A sad iron.
Yes, and she'd wrap it up in a towel. And then get it good and warm, and then she'd wrap that towel around my legs and wrap me in a blanket to keep my legs from aching.
Mm-hmm. We used those at night when our feet were cold.
What?
We used them on our feet at night when our feet were cold.
Yes.
I use heating pads now, but I have to do the same thing with my little granddaughter that lives with me.
Is there anything that stands out in your mind that marks whenever it bad times or when hard times started in the 30s?
The age I am, I was born 25.
I was born 29.
I didn't even know we were having a bad time.
Yeah.
Well, there's some things I remember.
Well, I remember some of the things. Now, I remember about Daddy's insurance.
I remember the bank going broken.
My dad was a World War I veteran. And he had a World War I insurance of some kind. I have no idea how much it was. But I remember that times were so hard that he cashed in his insurance.
I remember when all of our neighbors started leaving and going to California, and I thought that it was just awful because I didn't think we'd ever see them again. You know, somebody said, well, they haven't even got enough money to get out there. And I thought, well, they sure won't get back. And I wasn't very old, but I know that I probably heard the folks saying this, and it really registered. I was afraid they just wouldn't ever come back.
Did those people come back?
Nope.
No?
They came to visit a time or two, but they never did move back.
Huh. Well, something I remember is a little more on the trivial side, I guess, but there were a lot of kids in our family, and we were really, really poor. And if we had a penny to spend for a piece of bubble gum, it was a real, real treat. But the thing that I was going to say that I remember is Daddy was a pretty proud man, and he didn't like to take government-issue stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when you get to where you have to feed your family and you don't have any other way to do it, you do what you have to do.
Right.
And we wore government-issue clothes.
Oh, really?
And they were khaki-colored. You remember those things?
Mm.
Oh, I do.
Describe
I just hated those clothes.
I guess I didn't care.
They were, the skirts that we'd get were an old kind of a twill material.
Yeah.
And they really probably weren't bad clothes, but I don't know. But they were all the same color,
yeah.
And we had to wear those things. I hated those
the
things.
The teenagers today are wearing that khaki print, just like that
yeah,
stuff was.
But they
exactly.
weren't. It wasn't. It's not because they're poor and can't
no,
afford
it's because they got
anything.
Lots of money.
And they're spending a lot.
They're spending more on those than
mm-hmm. yeah.
But we had
that.
Flour sack. Clothes.
Yeah,
he
yes,
did too.
That's what
yeah.
we had.
And
we used all
and,
the sacks.
My daddy drew his money out of the bank at Tyrone before it, and he put it in the cellar, and we didn't know where it was, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd go get that, you know, and when we absolutely had to have it. And
you're talking about flour sack clothes, there were five girls in our family before there was a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that's quite a few girls to clothe. And Mama always made our bloomers mm-hmm. out of flour sacks.
Sugar yeah. sacks.
That's all we wore.
The yeah. sugar
flour
sacks
sack
had little tiny flowers, and mm-hmm. the flour sacks had bigger flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And so Mother made my dresses out of flour sacks, but the sugar sacks were used for my panties.
Mm-hmm. And
only they were bloomers.
We was talking about the Dirty 30s a while ago, too. But we had to hang gunny sacks, you know, over our windows mm-hmm. and to keep out. I mean, we dampen those and hang mm-hmm. them up, you know, keep
dirt
this,
out, keep some of it out,
wet and a, or well, a wet sheet.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. And you had to, when you sat your table, you had to turn your
yeah.
dishes upside down to keep from having
gritty
eating dirt and so on. After I moved to town, where somebody was talking about how bad the dust was, and I said, "You need to live out in the country."
Then you'd know what dust was. I stuffed many, many, many old socks and strips of worn-out sheets and just rags in the cracks around the window to keep
right.
that dirt out.
Sweep those down one day, and the next day you had to do it again.
Mm-hmm. And we'd take them out and wet them and put them back
uh-huh.
so we'd keep the dust out better. Mm-hmm. It was kind of just like filling it with a mud putty.
Yeah.
I remember one time, even after I was married and lived at Hooker, that the dust storm was so bad that we put wet sheets over all, and we lived in a new house. We put wet sheets over all the windows, and by then we had electricity, and I turned on my sweeper, and I went around over the house just in the air, you know, picking up.
Yeah.
Well, that must have been the same time that it was so bad in Diamond. When
it was terrible.
It was so bad that I could see the street light catty-cornered across the street just barely.
Yeah.
It was really bad. And then it started snowing, and everything was plastered with mud.
Yep. Well, that was like in the 50s, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. That wasn't back in the 50s.
No, that wasn't, no. But
we hung a gunny sack.
Hers wasn't way back then.
Mine was in the 40s.
Yeah.
We hung a gunny sack over this window and put a bucket up and let it drip water so the air would come in and be a little cooler for this brother that was living
mm-hmm.
with, you know. So.
What would you do for your invalid brother during a dust storm?
Well, we would just, you know, put damp things around. And sometimes I noticed one person said that they had, but I don't remember my folks doing that. Said that they took gauze and put mentholatum or Vaseline mm-hmm. or something and put over their face. Mm-hmm. But I don't remember us having to do that.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a room where the well was just right off of it. And he was on the south side. Most of those bad storms came from the north.
Yes,
at that time.
Yes, they did. Northwest.
And so we didn't get as much dust in his room as we did, but just protected him as best we could. You know, sometimes you'd throw maybe a newspaper over his face, you know, so he could get air.
When those first big black ones rolled in like that, mm-hmm. we didn't know whether it was going to be a tornado or a cyclone or mm-hmm. what. Mm-hmm. And I remember that Mother and Daddy told us to get in the cellar. Mm-hmm. And as I ran to get in the cellar, that gravel would just cut into my mm-hmm. legs, because I was barefooted probably too.
Probably.
And
we never did go to the cellar. Because of this brother, Dad said it was going to blow him away. Well, it's going to blow all of us away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we'd go to that cellar, and Daddy would take the hoe and a shovel. And I think he took a rake, too, because it had a longer handle, and he could push up every little while the little vent up on top where he kind of had a cap on it. Mm-hmm. And he'd push that up so that he'd know that the top of it, our air vent, wasn't closed, because if it had, he'd have started digging out that door, mm-hmm. because you never knew where that dirt was going to land when it was through, and whether we'd be buried alive or not. So he kept that long-handled rake, I think, in there for that one purpose, mm-hmm. but he had an axe and a shovel and the rake. Maybe the hoe. I don't remember all, but I know we always had those tools down in the cellar with us.
Did it ever scare you to go down there when there was a dust storm?
The first two times, we were all just terrified. Yeah. We didn't know what was going to happen. Hmm. But after that, we kind of were prepared. Mother kept a lamp down there and some big little books, and I'd read while the storm was going on.
I'm thinking, you know, that I'm not scared of storms, and I know that it was because of mm-hmm. not ever being shoved into the cellar, you know.
Well, my brother's still terrified of storms.
That's what I said.
But I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, if Daddy can stand out there and watch it till the very time it hits, I can too.
Yeah.
But I was the oldest.
This is what I've always wondered. Why did daddies think they were indestructible?
They were just trying to be sure Dad would do the same
thing. We were in a bad storm one time, and Daddy said, "You all get to the cellar." And it did turn out to be a bad storm.
It was a bad one.
And he said, "You get to the cellar." And he never did come to the cellar, and it blew our shop building away. It blew all of our farm tools.
It
blew the farm tools way down into the field. It blew everything. And I kept thinking, why does Daddy think he won't get hurt? That time, we had mattresses outside because it was so hot, and we had them out in the wagon.
We slept out.
And we were trying to get the mattresses in, and my brother was little, and he locked all the screen doors on the inside and wouldn't let us in. Finally, we got
he was locking the storm out.
Finally, we got in, and then we had to nail the windows in because they were all about to blow out.
Yeah.
And we had our supper on the table, and it just turned into a mud puddle. But anyway, we finally got to the cellar, and then there were, let's see, Don. We didn't have Don then.
I thought it was Margie. Oh,
we didn't have Lucy. So there were just seven of us then, seven kids. But anyway, we got to the cellar, and Mama said, "Where's Margie? Where's Margie? She's not here.
She was the younger one.
So she sent Ina. Ina was the oldest. She said, "You go back in the house and see if you can find Margie." So she goes back in the house. She finds Margie sitting in the rocking chair asleep.
Sound asleep.
So she gets her, but by the time we all got to the cellar, except Daddy, the storm was almost over. Mm-hmm. We spent most of the time
getting ready.
The chickens in the yard, it just picked them up and just blew them around everywhere. Just most of the little
Some
ones were killed. Most of them were killed.
It was terrible. I remember that one.
And the dirt was terrible.
Do you remember when it started to rain again after all these dust storms, and how you and your family reacted to finally see rain?
Oh, we were just happy. That's all I can remember. It really was a blessing, because every year Daddy'd say, "Well, maybe it'll rain," and so he'd plant another crop, and it'd just blow it away. I do remember the first year that it was so bad, we had had some carrots in our garden, and it covered them up completely, but probably midwinter, Mother decided one day, well, maybe there were still some of those carrots out there covered up. And she went out and dug around and found them, and we had stew. Because she found those carrots.
That was a real treat.
This is not a long time ago, but just this year, my garden at Hooker got pretty, the carrots got pretty covered up. And I dug them, and I bet we got, I started to say 20 bushels, but I don't know.
That's not a bunch. She still got a lot of carrots.
And they were good carrots.
Yeah.
Those were good.
I dug up half a dozen out of my little garden space just the other day.
Well, mine's not been very long. It was spring break at school.
Yeah.
My daughter came and helped me dig them.
It's been quite a while, of course, since the really bad times, but I drove for 4 hours last Friday in that bad storm. Uh-huh. I was coming from Santa Rosa, and I was traveling the same direction the storm was, so I never got out of it.
Oh, man.
And literally, I drove for 4 hours in that storm. And the dirt was so bad on my car that it sounded like my car was being sandblasted. You know, it was bad.
Well, my grandson-in-law was coming from Red River that same day, I guess, and he said he stayed in the storm the whole way.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of a concluding thoughts kind of question. How do you think living through the Dirty 30s and the Depression has affected who you are now? What kinds of things have endured?
I'll tell you. Right now, I'm getting a new carpet at my house, and I have a ton of things I need to get rid of because everything I've ever had, I've saved.
Yeah.
Because
exactly.
We're all being raised during that time. I just can't part with things that I know are still good.
Exactly.
And if someone doesn't want them, I keep them.
Exactly.
Well, Mary Young was my friend at Hooker. She's the same age Mama, 98. And I bet that she never threw, and people gave her things. She not only saved what she had, but I bet she had 200 margarine cartons and the lids. And, I mean, just things like that. And somebody'd say, Mary, what are you going to do with all those? I don't know, but one of these days I'll need them.
And I'll tell you something else that it did to me, and I think we're all probably all the same way. You knew that if something got broken or something bad happened to it, you were not going to be able to replace it. Mm-hmm. There was no money to replace anything. So you saved all the little tiny pieces and you glued it back together and you put it back together and you went on with, you used what you had because
Mama,
you didn't replace things because there was no money to do it.
Mama still does that.
Well, I do too.
Just this morning.
Mama spent the whole day gluing
something
together.
What's this board? He brought in a piece of a limb, it looked like. He said, what is this doing in the house? And I said, well, I think it came with a kit that came from out in Arizona that you build a lamp with. And I just didn't throw it away because I thought
someday you'd find a use for it.
But he threw it in the trash just this morning.
But you didn't. It's just like she said, you saved everything. And you made everything work.
First off, you didn't have very many things.
No. And if you threw something away, you didn't get it replaced. And so you were really, really careful with everything that you had.
You did keep everything.
I still have the little tiny tea set that I had when I was a child.
Yeah.
And part of it got broken. And it got glued back together. And I still have the glued back together pieces. Because they're not replaceable.
When I taught school, I told my students, if it's man-made, it can be repaired. Take care of it.
So you save and you fix.
What about your lessons that you carry with you?
I'm just like the rest of them. I just saved everything. Kids are beginning to take some of it because I know that if I don't care. I may always live there, but I know that they need, and that's just like I gave one of the kids found an old-fashioned churn,
uh-huh.
and So he said, "Mother, do you want this?" And I said, "No, go ahead and take it." I went up to Liberal to the antique shop, and I wrote and told him, I said, "Now you take care of it," because it was just $150. We probably gave five for it.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe not that much.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not $5.
Well, that's what I say. I don't remember how much we gave for it.
But like, my mother still has the crock churn that she had. But like if the dasher got broken or whatever, Daddy'd make a new one. You know, you didn't get a new churn.
No.
Right.
No.
That's right.
No. I've churned many a churns of cream with that.
That was another chore we had to do.
Yeah.
Was the churning.
I've got a what they call a pie safe.
Yes.
And it's 100 years old. Uh-huh. And everybody that comes in, they just admire it so much. And it came from Tennessee out here with my folks in 1916. So it's
Oh, I have antiques too, but gee whiz, the junk I've kept.
My grandfather had a mustache cup. That's something that always fascinated me. Was a mustache cup.
It has a lip in it, so your mustache won't get
down. It has a lip on the edge of it, so that it
little holes here, so that the stuff strains through, but the mustache doesn't get in.
So the big thing the Dust Bowl did for you guys was turn you into pack rats.
Yeah.
Yes,
actually, during that time and all, you didn't have anything to be a pack rat with.
Yeah.
It's just in modern days that we got to be a pack rat because we saved everything that we ever had, plus everything that we've bought ever since.
I have some second cousins that live out in New Mexico that came back here in about 90 to do some research on genealogy, and my dad was still living then, and he took them out north of Texoma where we were living during the dirty 30s, and they went over to where their old half dugout was, and they found some broken dishes, I mean pieces of broken china dishes, and we also found the brake from the wagon and things like that. But I think probably those girls were the kind that every little single thing that they could save, a broken dish or anything, they really thought it was
marvelous find.
It really was. Mm-hmm. It
I
was
have
really
trunks,
marvelous
some
fun.
Quilts and things like that. They're
Quilts.
Mm-hmm. Don't say quilts.
My one of my quilts is over 100 years old too. So
yeah, I have several loops. Are my grandmother's that she made before she got married.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How old is that one?
My folks made our bedding out of old, worn-out overalls.
Well, I figure 1890 or something like that.
And jeans. I mean, they weren't called jeans then.
Yeah.
They called them overalls and coveralls.
Mm-hmm.
But they were denim material.
Yeah.
And I still think I have an old comfort that's made out of blue jean material.
How old did you say your quilt was?
Well, I have several that my grandmother made before she got married. She got married in 1896.
Wow.
And so I've dated them kind of like 1890, 1888.
Yeah.
I mean, those in that era.
Wow.
I've got several of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really remarkable that even though the times were hard and things were bad, people that wanted to do quilts kept doing quilts. My grandmother.
Well, bedding was important.
My grandmother always had a quilt in.
Well, she made quilts then instead of blankets. We didn't have the blankets like they do today.
But she would write to us when after Mom and Daddy were away from her, and she'd say, "I'm out of scraps. I don't have a scrap to make a quilt out of." And Mama would order scraps out of Sears and Roebuck from Montgomery Ward, get a bundle for a dime.
But Grandma made mostly string quilts. You know what a string quilt is? You cut a block like this, if whatever you block out of
old paper or something.
Yeah.
And then you start on the corner. And
Sears Roebuck catalog.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And then you and sew on one piece, and then you put on the next piece and sew it down. And you, when you get through, you've just got all kinds of just strings, little pieces of scraps. I mean, they didn't throw away anything.
No, they didn't.
And every little old tiny piece that was big enough to even sew an edge down was used as a part of a string quilt block.
And most of hers were done by hand, too.
They were nearly all done by hand. I mean, they were pieced by hand, sewn together by hand, quilted by hand, and she carded the cotton.
By hand.
You ever heard of cards? Cotton cards? She carded all that cotton by hand to make the bats for the quilts.
I have the old, you know. I have an old cradle sewing machine.
I want to know, Bernine has several. These that she sewed on, how did she sew them together then this away?
She said,
because
look,
the paper wouldn't hold.
Look, if they weren't long enough to go across this way, she sewed them together and made a strip out of them.
Okay, yeah.
See?
But you joined the strips as you went.
So when she got through, the block was finished.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, right. Because,
And you said paper, and I thought, well, if they...
If the strip wasn't long enough, she just, pieced them together.
I make quilts like that today.
My sister is the quilter in our house. Oh, she's good.
I used to quilt a lot, but mine's crocheting now.
Well, I think that's all the questions that we have.
Did you get enough to do anything?
I think so.
She got lots of curious junk.
Yes, for sure.
We're information pack rats.
That's right. That's what
Well, it's really been interesting.
Well, I think you had a good time. You had fun. Mm-hmm.